Halo? Halo? Halo?
Test?
Halo? Halo?
Funker det bedre nå?
Ja.
Ok.
Hallo. Hallo.
Hallo. Hallo. Hallo. Hallo. Ja.
You and I would use the...
Yep.
Okay, welcome everybody to the September NIST lecture. We have a special guest coming in from CERN in Geneva. He's the Deputy Security Officer, Sebastian Lupinski. He will tell us more about security, computer security at CERN, threats, vulnerabilities, and the lessons learned. He has a background also from the technical direction, we said before. It was University of Warsaw, and is now also becoming the new director of the CERN School of Computer Science, I guess. Yeah. Okay. To start with, I wanted to have Stuart Kowalski briefly introducing next month's event, which is a special NIST lecture, if you like. It's the Sickert Knock. It's the end of the security month, and he will just briefly introduce the agenda for it.
Thank you, Laura. Yes, sorry for those that were in the room before. I'm going to have to repeat this very quickly. I have 2 minutes. On the 28th, it's an open seminar again. We have individuals coming from the Östermalm and from someplace in Europe. I'm not exactly sure where. We have some lieutenants coming and explaining cybersecurity defense in Europe and cybersecurity defense at Östermalm. They will have this seminar. During and after the seminar, we will have a student competition. The purpose of the student competition is to get you guys engaged. And if you want to, so of course, how you get Norwegian students engaged? How do we get Norwegian students engaged? Pizza. Pizza, yes. So we're going to have pizza a panic session. And what it is, it's called the cybersecurity challenge. And your job is to, your task is to tell a ghost story, a cybersecurity ghost story about an information security incident. The purpose of this is to get your fellow cyber citizens to stop, think social technical insecurity and security, and change their behavior. We're quite dependent on each other when it comes to cyberspace. So you're going to have 1 to 5 minutes to tell a ghost story, and there will be a panel of judges that will judge the ghost story. Also during the session, we would have a question competition. So we want students to ask questions of the presenters. The question does not have to be asked. It can be sent in through an app or a web page. And the one who asks the best question, it doesn't necessarily the one who asks the best question verbally, whatever. The one who submits the best question will win a prize. So you have to do that. So Q wants your questions. I don't know how many. Nobody here seemed to know who Q was. So that's showing. Okay, well, thanks, Eric. You're in my generation, I guess, sir. And you'll have some information about that. So join the challenge, figure out a ghost story, come for free pizza, and if you're the one who wins will get some interesting prizes sponsored by a Chinese telecom operator, a product supplier. All right, that's enough. That's it for me. And we'll move over now so Sebastian can do the real job.
Maybe just while Sebastian is setting up, so you need to sign up for Sickert Knock. You will be informed via INSEDA for the students, and for all others, you can send me an email, laura.georg@ntnu.com, and we will sign you up for the conference also. Thank you. Now, giving the talk to Sebastian.
Okay. Can you hear me? Okay, so good morning, or actually good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for coming. Thank you for this invitation. It's really a pleasure for me to be here. I was in Jövik back in 2008 because we had the CERN School of Computing here. So it's really great to come back here and to share with you a bit what we do at CERN in terms of computer security and what it really means to work on computer security in a big research international research lab. But let's start with learning some Chinese, and this will be relevant. It's not just to wake you up. So those two characters mean a... So this character is a person, and the other character, it's more complicated. I don't know why. It means a woman. And the question to you, or maybe you already know, but if not, I'll reveal at the end, what are those two characters? So there's this person in a box, and woman with something on the head. We'll see. It's security related. Anyway, so I should probably start with a very brief introduction of what is CERN. I know some of you do know because maybe I know that a couple of you actually were at CERN as researchers or as visitors. But very briefly, it's an international organization It's well, European Laboratory for Particle Physics. That's what that's a current kind of name, and that's current description of what we do. It was established more than 60 years ago. It's based in Geneva, well, near Geneva, Switzerland, but it's an international organization. It's not a Swiss laboratory. It's not a Swiss laboratory. It has 22 member states. Actually, Norway was one of the founding members of CERN. There are more than 2,000 employees, but what is more important is that there are roughly 13,000 users or visitors, researchers that are registered with CERN, and that some of them actually stay full time at CERN, some of them visit for, let's say, a week or a month every year. And the budget is roughly 1 billion Swiss francs. And now, all this. Well, you may have heard of CERN because, well, this is the place where actually the World Wide Web was invented in 1989. So this is the paper with the proposal. With honestly, if you read that paper and if you can, based on that paper, you can imagine what World Wide Web became, you're a genius, because this is, I wouldn't have guessed. Anyway, so the supervisor of the person at the time said, well, this is a very vague proposal, but still exciting. So this vague but exciting is a famous quote now. So this proposal was made, as you know, by Tim Berners-Lee, who then developed the system, the first web browser, web server, and actually this was physically the first web server in the world. Or more recently, you may have heard about discovering of the Higgs boson, which is an example of a collision in CMS experiments, or one of the collisions that found this, that proved that this boson exists. And with some statistically significant results, which resulted for those two gentlemen who predicted. Well, there are three gentlemen, but one of them has passed away since. So then those gentlemen, some 50 years ago, predicted existence of that boson, and they got a Nobel Prize a year later. I mean, in 2013. And all this was done. Thanks to this Large Hadron Collider accelerator, which is at CERN, which is actually not on the ground as you see. It's roughly where you see it, but this is 100 meters underground. It's 27 kilometers long. Well, you can also see the airport comparison to the size, and Lake Geneva and the Alps, and Mont Blanc is somewhere there. So it's really on the border, because this part is actually France, so it's really on the border, Swiss-French border. And interestingly, so in accelerator, because I am a computer engineer, but what physicists do, or engineers, accelerator engineers do, is they accelerate beams of particles so that they circulate this 11,000 times per second. So if you do the maths, 27 kilometers times 11,000 times, it's pretty much the speed of light. So this is how the accelerator looks inside. Those are the magnets, dipoles for bending the beam, and actually they work with almost zero Fahrenheit, 1.8 Kelvin, of course. So basically it's colder than the outer space, and this is to keep the magnets superconductive. So this is quite amazing by itself. And then the beams of particles collide in experiments. This is one of the experiments, ATLAS, which is still under construction. So you can see the scale. There's a gentleman here. And this huge machine where particles collide, it contains 1,500 million sensors. And they generate a lot of data, basically. And because the collisions can happen 40 million times per second, so with 40 megahertz. And it generates roughly a petabyte per second. So it's a lot of data if you think about this. So this is more roughly how it looks like, that particles colliding, some results flying off. And then, of course, well, I know there are a few physicists here in the room, so please forgive me my simplifications. This is a layman understanding of what happens inside. And then, you know, here basically it's like a big camera, so basically information are then collected. Well, filtered out, so only some of them make it to the eventually to the computer center. But this is still, the numbers are a few years old, this is still a few gigabytes per second. So this is the data that we have to deal with, which means we have to analyze that data, reconstruct events, and then, maybe prove or disprove some theories. And this is not only done at CERN. This computing is also done in a so-called worldwide LHC computing grid, where basically computer centers from various laboratories and institutes and research labs around the world contribute with the computing power and storage to achieve this goal of doing physics analysis. And this kind of brings me more into where, you know, where we are, well, where I want to focus is, well, to start with, where is computing at CERN? So there are kind of four sectors, if you think of this. First, CERN is a big campus, so it's like a city. There are up to maybe, at every given moment, up to 10,000 people on site with their computers, laptops, the mobile devices, and so on. So this desktop mobile computing is one thing that we want, that is there and that we want to protect. Then we have, actually several computer centers. This is a view of one of the computer center. And there we have a big number of computer and computer systems and storage systems. And we're holding, I think, currently on disk, I can't recall the final number, but I think it's roughly 150 petabytes of data per disk on disks, and then even more on tape, magnetic tapes. So this is the second part, the whole computer center with all the services that we have to protect. And then we need to protect the computing grid. So this distributed network or computer centers. And then another part, if you think of this, so CERN is also really an industrial site because there are accelerators, there are detectors, there are a lot of technical installations. And they are also controlled with computer or computer systems. So this is also something that needs to be protected, the control system. So those are four for sectors of computing. Now, all this, it's actually in this environment which has this strong notion of academic freedom. So it's not a place where I can come and I can tell everyone you should use this operating system or this programming language or this, you know, because the idea is that, and actually there is a value in this, that people actually can choose what they work with. And also, you know, we have a lot of smart people, which means sometimes we get interesting comments from them. So, for example, one of them is someone, and those are real quotes, someone said, you know, I failed to pass a security course because these questions are so stupid in the security course. If you want to meet me personally, I can teach you computer security. So this is what someone wrote to us. Or, why there are those idiotic policies in place to forbid us use of certain technologies? And this is actually a good question, because, you know, if you establish policies that restrict people too much, it's actually very bad for their productivity. Or someone says, I want to point out that I'm not I do not have a tail, I don't feel like being treated like a circus dog. So, interesting quotes from, you know, people. Or, and this is kind of typical, whenever we have to discuss and, for example, require that some system is secure more, then we have to be able to prove this, that this is needed. And someone says, you know, I fully recognize the importance of computer security at CERN. However, I'm not sure that you have yet appreciated that computer security is not the raison d'être of CERN. So the reason why we're there, which is very true. So, and this brings me to this balance that, you know, I, with my computer security work, I want to keep things as secure as possible. But then we really have to balance this with the operational needs of what people need to do on a daily basis, and also with this academic freedom. And then, of course, we have sometimes, just for your amusement, people who actually really seek help. So there's this person who wanted to read a book called Understanding Stupidity. So downloaded this, actually it's an .exe file, and clicked without, ignored the warning, and then got infected. So my question, is my PC infected and how do I stop this? And then the person said, well, probably I don't need to read the book anymore. I will have to look in the mirror to understand stupidity, which is a fair comment, actually. And that brings me to saying that, you know, even in a audience which is full of smart people, not everyone will always be able to understand the security risks and will always be able to understand that, you know, what to do in a given situation. So, of course, one of the activities that we do is awareness raising, but we want to go much further than this to create the security culture. So, of course, there are posters and leaflets at CERN, we have support of top management, so security is mentioned by, for example, by the director general in the yearly presentation and by IT department head and so on. And this is actually extremely important because you cannot do security if there is no support from the management. And there are actions behind that, not just words. And then also we organize events when we, you know, train and teach people. Although this is interesting, because if you look at the room, there are people there, and this is an advanced topic because my colleague is discussing rootkits. Now, but if you look at the room, basically we know already people in the room, which means we already, those who came, they are already convinced that security is important, right? So it's like preaching to the converted. While what we want to achieve is that everyone understands, you know, that this situation, this is what we want to avoid, that people are in a very dangerous situation without realizing this. And now in physical world, I mean, if you see this picture, you know that some, well, this guy clearly didn't know that there's some problem, but you all feel that, you know, there is something very wrong in the situation. While the problem with digital, with computer systems, with digital life, is that we may be at risk, at direct risk, without realizing this, because we are not trained to this. And then this I will skip. And what we want really to achieve is eventually this security culture where we behave in a secure way even without thinking about this. So it's a bit like safety. Do you see anything wrong on that picture? I mean, I'm not talking about politics, right? I'm just talking about, like safety-wise, do you think see anything wrong? Exactly. There is no seatbelt. The gentleman here has no seatbelts. And also, he's not looking where he drives, but that's another story. You know, if you think of this, you know, like many, many years ago, there were no seatbelts in cars. And even when seatbelts were introduced, it took years of convincing people and also forcing people by law to fasten their seatbelts. But I think these days, it's like it became a natural habit. I guess most of you don't even think about this, or don't have to remember, well, I have to close the seatbelt. You just do it completely automatically, right? And this is what we, you know, so we want to have this change in behavior, also in security, computer security, but also change in beliefs and perception. So this is what kind of defines a change, a security change, culture change. And okay, this is another separate topic, which I could discuss for a long time, but just to mention that one of the approaches that we do have at CERN is try to use existing processes and situations to introduce security messages and raise awareness and remind people about the importance of security in various processes. So HR processes throughout the kind of lifetime of a person at CERN, through technological situations where whatever people interact with computer systems, and other situations. Now, let me move more into more technical domain, so vulnerability management. And of course, big part of protecting a computer infrastructure in a place like CERN, in a laboratory like CERN, is finding problems and fixing them before they are found and attacked and exploited by malicious people. And it's a really non-trivial problem. So, because vulnerabilities pop up all the time, and you may have vulnerabilities in products that are used everywhere. So, for example, Heartbleed, you may remember, it was a bug in OpenSSL library, I think 2 years ago, that all of a sudden it meant that all SSL servers are potentially vulnerable to this Heartbleed bug. And just as a reminder, just to show you, you know, that the concept was very, very simple for those that maybe didn't know details. You could ask a server, so this is a client, and you could ask a server, server, are you still there? If so, reply me with the word hat, which has 500 letters. Well, word hat doesn't have 500 letters, of course. But what the attacker would do what the vulnerable server would do, it would reply word hat, and then, but it would send not 3 letters, but 500 letters, just dumping memory of the server and sending it to the client. And of course, server memory can contain many, many interesting things. Maybe logs, maybe password of users, maybe private keys of the server, and so on. So this affected everyone, including CERN. And now reacting fast and patching and actually finding even vulnerable servers in a vast and very heterogeneous infrastructure, this is a challenge by itself. And of course, you know, these days, those kind of vulnerabilities pop up very often. So this is a remote command execution vulnerability in Bash shell, so Linux Unix shell, which was then there since 1989. And it was discovered in September 2014, I think, so exactly 2 years ago. So for 25 years, there was a critical bug that at least was not known publicly. Maybe it was known to some people who were exploiting it. And then, you know, all of a sudden, you have to patch. Now, it of course doesn't. It's not limited only to general software. We also have our bugs in our systems, So, for example, this is a piece of code. I will not go into details, but it's a piece of code from some parallel code that was running as root on our Linux clusters, the cluster that are used for physics analysis, so on thousands and thousands of machines. And basically, you know, this single line is actually vulnerable to two. There are two privileged escalation vulnerabilities which let local unprivileged user to get root privileges. So very, very bad. Especially done on those computers, we had, by definitions, local, potentially untrusted users. And, okay, it's also interesting, you know, how do we find this stuff? So, you know, if you ask me who found this bug, is it me? Well, I would be happy to say that yes, but it would be a lie. So, in fact, it was someone from CERN, a CERN user, reported it to us and said, look, I found it. I think there's a bug. So then we are like, okay, but how did you find it? How did you, I mean, it's not your code. How did you find this vulnerability? And the person replied, well, I was in this usual boring meeting and I just listed some processes on this cluster and I was just looking around. And this is also very amazing for me because it means that when people are bored, they are very creative. There are, you know, there's some power in it, those boring meetings. But again, this is, you know, for me there are, so one thing is, you know, in 2004, who really knew how to do secure coding? Did you know? I mean, those who coded it in 2004, right? It's at that time, you know, this was not a common knowledge. I'm not sure even if right now it's a common knowledge. And, you know, it's not surprising for me that we have been running code that was developed in 2004 and we're still running it, because this is reality. Everywhere you look, you will see old code that is running. Then, but at least this you can patch. And now if you look more into hardware, so this, you know, memory, DRAM memory, can this be vulnerable? Like vulnerable to, you know, security vulnerability that you could exploit and get root privileges, for example, on a machine? Would you say it's possible? So it's kind of strange because, I mean, like a year ago, I would say it's impossible, but then, you know, there were those Google researchers that proved me wrong, and they, you know, found out that since memory cells are getting smaller and smaller, then if you access repeatedly a given row of cell, then basically the cells start interacting electrically, and adjacent cells can have so-called memory bit flips, so basically they change memory in other memories, parts of memory, with, you know, simple code that would loop and read some data. And this, they proved, it's a physical fact, that they proved that this couldn't be actually exploited to do privilege escalation. They, you know, researchers did this proof of concept, and this was already amazing by itself. But this was just research. And now, unfortunately, a year later, so this year, there were actually real attacks exploiting that vulnerability on systems that also we use at CERN. How do you patch this? How do you patch hardware memory, right? So things are getting harder and harder. Okay, then if I go quickly to different attack vectors that we see, and you know, I know that I cover various topics quite quickly because information security is such a vast domain. So obviously, what are the two main attack vectors? It's web and mail. This is how at least end users get attacked, and also systems. And you know, it's so easy to attack. You just send an email, and if you receive such an email, do you always check, you know, what is the link behind? If this is a really link to LinkedIn, or you just click? I mean, it's so tempting to just click, right? And of course, we receive at CERN a lot of phishing or malicious emails. This is one example that was actually targeted at CERN, because you see CERN somewhere here. And also, we did some experiments, and we were sending similar emails. So, well, okay, does this look like a real email to you? This was an email that was sent to some conference participant last year. So I crafted it. I'm happy about this because it's, you know, but I was only using public knowledge. And we sent this, so like knowledge that if you just browse the conference website, you would get all this information. And we send it to participants on a given conference. It's like system administration and service managers of IT services in research labs of particle physics. And basically, this link was correct. I mean, this really went to some timetable. But then, you know, and there are free drinks here. So free drinks, everyone clicks, right? And people actually clicked. So although this link does not go here if you hover your mouse. And, well, the click rate was 29%, which is... out, so 30% of people who should know, right? And I'm not even blaming them, because, I mean, I would almost click myself. Because it's sometimes, you know, you just have to make a quick decision and whether you click on a link or not. And then we did also similar experiment training, and also it was part of the awareness raising campaign at CERN. And then the click rate was 22%. So you know, even if you write something that is really clearly, you know, testing of a new booking system of what? Right? Testing of a new system. Click here. Now, this can have serious consequences. But let me first quickly mention, so you may have heard about this hacking team company, small Italian company that was creating spyware that was bought by governments to spy quite often on their own citizens. And they were selling those tools to also to countries that were known for, well, human rights abuses. So, you know, ethically discussable. Now, they got hacked last year. So many, many people in the security in the kind of communities were very happy about this. And a lot of data was published on them, like I think 400 gigabytes of emails, exploits, and so on and so on. So, you know, many people were saying, well, they deserve it. The problem is that with those leaks, leaked a lot of actually exploits, so code to exploit vulnerabilities, including so-called zero-day, so unknown vulnerabilities, or at least not patched yet. And those exploits were reused by criminals within hours. So, for example, you know, there was one vulnerability to Flash player, which was within hours put into this Angler exploit kit. And how is it relevant to us? Well, because we receive an email in, this is July the 9th, also some people at CERN received, and this link does not go to a PDF, it actually goes to that, to an exploit kit that also included exploit for that not non-patchable yet vulnerability in Flash. So, you know, this kind of things affect you and affect us right away. How do you protect yourself against such an exploit? There is no patch yet, right? And then how infections look, you know, how they work is, so this is kind of a normal scenario how people get infected. Either they visit a normal website which has malicious advertisement, and this is a trend that we see a lot. So you visit that's what's happened in Switzerland a couple of times in the recent years, including one website, 20minutes.ch, so it's like a popular newspaper, that was basically serving malicious content and malicious advertisement that was then redirecting to, well, eventually to some exploit kit and infecting computers. Or other people just visit compromised websites, legitimate, but compromised websites. Or just receive, again, a link in an email that, again, redirects them eventually to some exploit kits. Again, it's very, very hard to fight with this and to protect, in our case, our users. But this, let's say, affects everyone, what I'm saying here. And now it could be more interesting maybe to try to see, and I'll try to give you my perspective on one. Why would actually someone want to target CERN specifically, or maybe more generally a research laboratory? So who could do that and why? And I think, you know, this motive, this question of what are the motives of the attacker is very important, because when you understand why people would attack you, then you can actually try to, you know, defend yourself one way or another. So traditionally, this is these days the three classes of actors, I would say. And I mean, I'm sure that you're not surprised to see criminals here. And of course, their motivation for hacking, for infecting, is profit. Eventually, they are really revenue driven. So the criminals go where the money is. There are also hacktivists. So people who would hack not really necessarily for money, but more for ideological reasons, maybe for revenge or for other reasons. And then, of course, well, you do have governments. I'm not saying that governments hack CERN, but certainly there are actors in a information security, online security these days. And I'll show you some examples. And, well, they are driven more by politics, by control. But this also indirectly affects, I think, everyone, and also affects us at CERN. Okay, so how can someone make money from hacking a science lab?
Well, a science
So one, yes, that, exactly. So one idea is exactly, we have a lot of computing power and computing resources. So worldwide computing grid. And actually, there was a case when some even actually malicious insider, not at CERN, but some other lab, so a local sysadmin, was using those resources to mine Bitcoin. Which, by the way, is not a good idea because mining Bitcoin on general purpose hardware is very, very ineffective these days. And actually, that person was even planting false evidence to cover his tracks and to kind of, to show that it was someone else mining the Bitcoins. Okay, so that's one case. But otherwise, we do fundamental research. We don't do applied research. We don't do research and development. For a lab at CERN, one of the ideas is that really the results of the research are public. So why would you hack in there? Well, there are various aspects to it, including that some people believe that, we do particle physics, we do particle collisions, we may create, black holes, and this will destroy the universe, basically. And there are those fears somewhere, and eventually, sometimes, there was, at the recent LHC startup after the long shutdown, there are even some death threats that were being posted against, really people in our community. So this is a bit outside of my scope, but this is, since it was online, we also looked into it. And this is actually worrying, if you think of this. But okay, that's an extreme case. But just to show you that people may be motivated by things that you would normally say, no, come on, it's impossible. Now, okay, black hole fears aside, why would someone specifically target CERN? And, I'll try to show you some examples on this. We, for example, at CERN, have CERN Internet Exchange Point. So every country has a couple of Internet Exchange Points. There are three in Switzerland, so it's really like a backbone, part of Internet. And we have one of them, which means local Internet service providers, like my home, is connected to the Internet through CERN Internet Exchange Point. So it's even an activity which is not directly related to CERN, but it's, so if someone attacks there, our network will be affected. Or, for example, there's this document, Impact of the 2014 Conflict in Gaza Strip. And this is a document published by UNESCO or UNOSAT, so UN Agency for Satellite Imaging Analysis Processes. And why do I mention here? Well, because CERN provides computing facilities, so web and storage and computing for UNOSAT. And this is great, but then, one day there may be someone who, for political or other reasons, will want to target, that organization or those documents stored at CERN. Or there's, for example, Zenodo service. So it's Zenodo.org, and it's a service for storing data of researchers, especially researchers that don't have access already to some facilities, so maybe individuals or small teams. And all scope of field of sciences are accepted, and anyone may register as a user, and you can store whatever content you want. Now, again, it's hosted at CERN. And actually, CERN, so it's a service run at CERN, and even CERN is a selling point because we basically say, if we can store, petabytes of data for the LHC experiments, well, then certainly we can store your data. And this is great. I really like this approach of, supporting long tail of science. But then, one day maybe someone will upload some data there, which is maybe very sound, from the scientific point of view, but maybe have geopolitical consequences, right, or implications. So I'm not advocating against this service. It's a very good service, but just to understand where different threats can come from. So we never do just science. And then, even if we focus on science only, then we have a lot of computing power again, a lot of clusters. And then people do, this is just a drawing of a kind of ongoing malicious activity, infection, operation, which affected academic sites, including at CERN, where basically attackers were compromising, thousands of computers, but, thousands of home computers, nothing, because these days, as botnets, So networks of compromised computers may have millions of compromised computers, home computers. Here it was thousands, but servers, Linux servers. And academia is often targeted. Or even, this is a some published research on a malware family called Regin. So this is clearly a government-sponsored malware. Government, some nation state was creating that malware to spy on other governments or companies. And there was a, so it turned out that there was one company, one country somewhere in the Middle East that this malware infected, you know, president's office and some research institutes and some banks. But then to exfiltrate data and to leak data to another country, well, in this case it was India, but it could be anywhere, doesn't matter. All that data was going not directly from, let's say, from the president's office to another country, because that would maybe raise suspicions. They were tunneled through compromised computers in some educational institutes. And only then, from that single computer, actually, data was sent to outside of the country. And you know, then some computer, some university that contacts another server in India, okay, this no one would spot in intrusion detection. So my lesson here is that, you know, even if we're not targeted directly, we may be affected by this kind of operations. We may be a side victim, in a way. And then I would just like to finish with a couple of stories of incidents that we saw at CERN. For example, we see this kind of tweet. Someone says, you know, hacking CERN, exploiting some Python library for fun and profit, or for particles and profit in that case. And you look into this, and you see that, it's not hacking CERN. The guy just discovered a vulnerability in that module, Python module, and says, you know, CERN software was simply used as a real fun example because their package depend on it. In other words, not CERN is not vulnerable. Everyone is vulnerable, but I just use CERN because it sounds cool. By the way, we're actually not using that module, so you know, even the statement was wrong. Or, you know, people tweeting things like, CERN discloses password, source code, and tickets to web spiders. Just a side comment here, you can see that our colleague working on social media, actually Kate, actually responded to this and asked for, you know, because the question is, how do you respond? Do you acknowledge there is a problem? How do you contact the guy and so on? So we just asked, you know, could you just share details with us? And he was positively impressed that, you know, we reach out, because I think many companies even don't want to know or pretend, no, there's no problem. So I think, you know, it's worth being open. And then, okay, we had this case. Are there any Greeks here in the? Okay, so you may maybe read. But it's not to blame, huh?
No.
Okay, it's because there is a, you know, text in Greek which says basically, so this was a web server at CERN compromised a couple of years ago, but I'll mention why. And there's some, you know, Greek message saying, you know, it's no security at CERN and it's so easy to hack. Now, in fact, this is not a compromised website. It's a file added to some web server of some monitoring system. Added because there was an upload form without any protection. Okay, so a blunder, but I wouldn't say it was a technically, you know, advanced attack. Now, the problem was that that particular date was the LA startup date of the Large Hadron Collider accelerator. So all the media attention of the world was at CERN. And then, you know, at that day, you know, those guys did whatever they did, and some media, Greek media picked it up, and then international media picked it up, and then it's out of control. And this is quite interesting, because basically then you see, you know, things like hackers infiltrate Large Hadron Collider system. And that was, by the way, monitoring of one of the experiments. Monitoring, so read-only system, right? They just added one file. Or, you know, headlines like, hackers came close to turning off particle detector. Is that true? No. Can you correct that message? No. And so we are really on a spotlight, and there are other examples. You know, there was a case when someone discovered some passwords that were published incidentally actually to some real control systems, fortunately monitoring and so on. And just to finish, you know, CERN people also keep us busy. And this is maybe a bit of amusement, although some of them are not. So, you know, would you say visiting this website is part of your professional duties? Probably not. then why do people, some people at CERN, register there with their CERN email addresses? And you know, yes, and this, of course, may even have reputation image. Okay, we're not worse than United Nations, at least. Or, you know, can you see anything wrong on those pictures? If you look, you know, closely, you will see some passwords in the background. And the third picture is from us. So there was a CERN bulletin article, that's Fire Brigade, and, you know, and in the picture, high resolution, you could read passwords to some systems, you know. You know, people use, you know, images that they don't have copyrights for, and, you know, this can be very delicate, or actually it's a clear violation of copyrights. More seriously, even sometimes we do have cases of people at CERN using pirated software, or interestingly, using pirated licenses for software that CERN has licenses for. I mean, that's stupid. That's really stupid, right? And this can be very, very serious. Or a case where, you know, it's even a case outside of computing in a way because it's a mobbing case. But basically, so what happened is that someone didn't log out or lock his computer and some colleagues came and posted this announcement in the name of a guy at CERN to our CERN market saying, you know, I'm looking for a partner to dance, either male or female. I have a great body. I enjoy rubbing it against other people. So it's, you know, it's... It's delicate, you know. So, you know, some of the cases that we see. And then if you go into even more serious things, well, in a big organization, over the years, you will always have also really people who do something malicious on purpose. We had a case of a malicious, of a research who hacked a computer, an account of a fellow research, to destroy data, to change some simulation, you know, parameters, so that the simulation results would be completely wrong. Again, motive is always interesting to understand. It was probably about competing for the same job position. Engineer planting a logic bomb in some software that would go off only after the end of the contract of that engineer. So like a revenge, because that person did not get an indefinite contract. And recently, an ex-employee creating backdoors in some online system that CERN uses. Now, maybe that backdoor was only just to, you know, access some past work, or maybe not. Part of the problem is that since it's an online, you know, software as a service, cloud-hosted, system, it's not on our premises, it's on some servers of a cloud provider, then even getting the logs is very hard. And this was a very interesting lesson for us, that basically when we try to get logs of, you know, from some external company, this, you know, to be able to understand the extent of the event, it's very worrying. It's very, because it's very, very hard. So, I know this was a very overview of various aspects. I would be tempted to give some conclusions, but it's hard to... Probably the best way I can say it is that, you know, as you saw, it's a problem about technology, and there are several things about technology, but also about people. Because eventually there are users, there are people, attackers are humans, users are humans, those who develop and maintain systems are humans. And by the way, do you see anything strange or wrong on that picture? Right, the mouse is upside down, right? It's a real case. I had a colleague at CERN. I mean, this is really a picture that I took of a desk at CERN. And this guy actually learned to use his mouse upside down, which is very hard if you think about this, because, you know, you move up and the cursor goes down. I mean, everything's left is right is mixed, right? But he got very proficient in it. So, and this is for me, amazing for various reasons, but also it shows that even if you design a technology and you believe that, you know, okay, this technology is designed in a way that everyone will understand how to use it, and there's just one way to use it, well, someone will get it wrong. And how do you work with it? So, just to finish, to give you the answers here, well, this is a prisoner. Person in a box is a prisoner, and this is not what we want. So we don't want to put people in boxes. We don't want to restrict them. We don't want to overprotect them. We don't want to limit their freedom. What we want to do is to put a hut on top of them, or roof, right? And this, by the way, in Chinese really means secure or security or secure. And this is what we try to have this approach, focusing, well, also on people. Okay, thank you very much.
Are there questions to Sebastian?
Okay.
Hi. Going back to the car analogy,